boatload of goals for the big three welcomes us back from the international break as La Liga football returns and gives us 39 goals across 8 games on Saturday and Sunday, including Barca putting 4 past Deportivo, Madrid hitting 6 past Real Betis, and Granada seeing 7 fly past them as Carrasco gets a hat-trick and Atletico put 7 past the La Liga strugglers. Yes, domestic action is back. It has returned, and Marca's Eye on La Liga podcast is here to break it all down and look ahead to a midweek of Champions League football as well. I'm Ollie Wilson, your host, and guiding me on the journey through the gluttony of goals are two great Marca minds. First, Ewan McTeer, Spanish football writer and author of Ibar the Brave, joining us on the show. Ewan, pleasure to have you on once again, mate. How was the weekend? Imagine you're a little bit breathless after all the La Liga action we saw.
Yeah, I'm still trying to count all those goals, but it was all good fun.
It's certainly good to see them flying in, although perhaps it makes every game a little one-sided, or at least some of them, especially the ones involving the big three. Also on the show today, fellow Spanish football journalist and, dare I say, expert, Mark Mayo, back as always to provide his voice, dulcet tones perhaps, and his thoughts for the show. Mark, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, all good, thanks. Just blinked a couple of times over the weekend, so I'm just catching up with all the goals now.
It's tough to actually watch the highlights because you're going through, and even if you take your eye away for a second, as you say, you do miss a fair bit of the action. There's loads to get through on the show, so we'll dive straight into it with a week of Champions League football coming up. Let's start with a side that doesn't look like they're going to be anywhere near European football for a little bit of time, at least. One of my favourites to talk on this show, Valencia. Cesare Prandelli taking charge for the first time of his new club since being appointed back in early October, just before the international break. And by some miracle, he gets this Valencia side to win on the road. First and foremost, let's talk about, because we haven't discussed it yet on the show, Cesare Prandelli's appointment. Is this a really positive one for Valencia fans? Can they look at this and go, right, we've actually got a manager who's got a lot of credibility. He's been out of the game for some time, but he's done it in Italy, arguably one of the toughest leagues in Europe. He's produced in Turkey as well, although he had a bit of a rocky time with Galatasaray. This is a manager, though, that can deal with adversity, and that's really what Valencia need.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've started off with a season that needs turning around, and he's come into a team that he's kind of managed these sort of teams before. When he came into Italy, they had just had some tough times. Galatasaray managed expectations as well. So you find yourself in a situation of, what are you actually looking for in Valencia? Are you looking for someone to steady the ship? Are you looking for someone to come in and actually bring them to the top of the table, like that's ever going to happen? So Prandelli effectively is the right man because he's coming in to steady the ship. And it was actually, since Estevan's gone, they've had a really favourable run of fixtures. And it's nice to see that those players actually are capable of winning some games in a couple of times. So, yeah, it was a good performance on the weekend, a good appointment, certainly.
In terms of this appointment, though, you mentioned the favourable fixtures, but it's been tough for most Valencia managers over the last, 2-3 years to try and get results in any sort of fixture. Ewan, with Prandelli, Mark already said, steadies the ship, certainly. Do you think that'll be a long-term thing that Prandelli is able to do? Defensively, Valencia have been so poor, but you'd imagine with an Italian manager, and we've seen Italian managers succeed defensively in numerous areas around the globe, that he can build from the back and just settle the ship, because the easiest way to settle the ship is prevent the other sides from scoring, and then you can afford to go up the other end and nick one or two and just about squeeze past and get some points.
Yeah, it seems like that's exactly what he was looking to do at the weekend, was just not concede. And I think it helped that they got an early goal, because it would have been interesting to see if it had been 0-0 at half time, if he'd have had to attack a little bit more. But with it, the 1-0 advantage, which they obviously blew as well, when they took the lead again, they just kind of sat back. And it was interesting that he played Dani Parejo as the number 10, and he normally plays as a defensive midfielder, so that was already a defensive-minded move. And then he played João Cancelo, the right-back, as the right attacking midfielder, so he had two right-backs on the right-hand side. It was kind of a case of just shutting up shop, and it remains to be seen if that's what he's going to try and do, if that's a long-term vision for Valencia. But it might just be a case of, Gijón's not an easy place to go. Valencia have been pretty poor at the back. Maybe just, steady things down for the first few weeks, play a little bit more defensively, avoid conceding goals, and then once you've got the defence sorted, work on the attacking sense. But Parejo in the attacking midfield, he contributed a lot to to going forward. He was the man that made the first two goals, so it seemed to work for them. It seemed to click, but again, it was one game, so we'll see how it goes from here.
It'd be interesting with Dani Parejo, arguably one of the best players in that Valencia side, still remaining at the club after the mass exodus this year. And Prandelli seemed to want to get him involved, which I think is why he put him in that very much that pivotal role in the middle of the park. And I suppose, Mark, every good manager knows if you want to win games, get your best players on the ball. And that seemed to be what he did with Parejo. And it allows then a bit more of a feed out to the likes of Santi Mina on the flanks as well, and to generate a bit of width by just having somebody that can distribute forward to the front man or send it wide and be smart enough to even knock it back if need be. It's just a very controlled player on the ball that they have in Parejo. And a man who still can't get any love from his home fans, who have been still calling him a dog and things like that in the streets around Valencia as well.
It's interesting that the sort of thing you have to do when you get players, you know, controlling on the ball, as you say there, but you've also got to get them onside. You've got to get them backing the manager, and putting him in that sort of talismanic position so early on shows that you're going to be my man. What the fans say, maybe they'll come around if he scores the winner in a couple of weeks' time, who knows? But he's clearly told Parejo that you're not a predictable player, but a reliable player. And Santi Mina and Nani and players aren't necessarily reliable, and they'll blow hot and cold. So it was a sensible thing to bring him into the middle, and especially away from home, as Ewan says, to make sure that you don't just find yourself two goals down so early on like they have done so often this season. It was quite an important thing to do.
Yeah, and important as well that Alves in between the posts doesn't have to face too many more penalties this season. He's got a great record, as we discussed a few weeks ago on the show, but finally a week where he wasn't facing anything from 12 yards from the spot. Let's move away from Valencia and talk about another side that are involved in European competition but not in the Champions League this week. Villarreal wrapping up the Sunday with an incredible 5-0 victory. And Ewan, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the Yellow Submarine in particular, because Fran Escriba coming in and taking over this side so late on before the season started. So many expecting Villarreal to struggle, especially when they lost Soldado early on in the campaign as well through injury, going to be out for a lengthy period of time. They lost their best defender at Eric Bailly. We've spoken about this on the show, but four wins, four draws and no defeats yet this season. A brilliant start for Villarreal. And you want to praise Escriba a lot for what he's done coming into the club.
Yeah, he didn't have a lot to work with. You know, it's never easy going into any club, working with any setup. Like we just talked about Prandelli, he can put his best players, like Parejo, on the ball. Most of his best players were either sold, like Bailey, Denis Suarez went back to Barcelona, for example, or they were injured. They had Roberto Soldado out. Bakambu as well was missing for the first few weeks. He didn't have a lot to work with. And it showed in the Champions League qualifier when they lost to Monaco. But in La Liga, they've you know, worked really well, and he's almost got them playing more like Villarreal than Marcelino had them playing. Marcelino, the Villarreal under him were a little bit more defensive minded, whereas the Villarreal, the ones that I remember from, you know, a decade ago when they went on the Champions League runs, that was a very fluid, attacking, quite exciting Villarreal side, full of flair, and they seem to lose that a little bit, even if they were quite successful last season. But with Escriba, they're almost back to the Yellow Submarine of old, which is exciting and proven quite successful, only 2 points off the lead. So, yeah, it's gone. Well, I don't think anyone expected them to be this close after 8 matches.
Now, there's always something that kind of worries me when you see people on Twitter and social media and they start talking about, that's a very good player. I wouldn't be surprised if another club from England or elsewhere started looking at them in January. And Bakambu is somebody, after his performance this weekend against Celta Vigo, who a lot of people have started murmuring that on social media. Surprising, though, that Bruno Soriano isn't the one being discussed a lot as well. For me, he's been far more influential than Bakambu so far in this season, holding this Villarreal side together. But are they going to be struggling to keep hold of somebody like Bakambu come January? Because he was excellent against Celta Vigo this weekend, got on the score sheet as well, of course. And last season, particularly in the back end of the campaign, was very, very difficult for defences in La Liga to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, last season, most of his goals in the second half of last season came in the Europa League, which I think sort of helped him a little bit. He kind of went under the radar a little bit. If it had been these goals coming in the Camp Nou or the Bernabeu, he might have, you know, his stock might have risen even more. But yeah, they were sort of lucky to keep him last summer, because he was certainly good enough to make a move to the Premier League. Whether they keep hold of him after, you know, summer 2017, that's going to be unlikely that he'll stay for another season. But if he seems happy, if he's got a place in Villarreal, and if they can, you know, get back into Europe, maybe even push for that Champions League spot again, then, you know, why would he want to move?
Well, they are level on points with Barcelona at the moment, and just sat level on fourth spot in the La Liga table, perhaps tinkering on Champions League just yet, but there's a long, long way to go yet in the season. What about Soriano, a dictator in that Villarreal side, but really that midfield four and the versatility that they've got? We've seen a couple of different changes in formation this season from Villarreal. Do you like that adaptability from a side, Mark, rather than being too rigid and having this is exactly the system we're going to play time and time out again? Do you prefer seeing a side that's able to change and adapt to different teams, different tasks?
I think it's important when you're a side like Villarreal, who has quality and talent but aren't necessarily like a Barcelona or Real, who can just steamroll sides in their same way every week. When you're just slightly below that, to have that ability to shift things up and surprise opponents as well as be better than them, then it's really key. And you've got Soriano, who's a very versatile player in himself. You can put him wide. He can be a box-to-box central midfielder. He's done very well in the past as that. Very experienced at doing that. And players like Bruno and Trigueros as well, you can adapt them. And Sansone, he sort of played up front in a way on the weekend. And having these type of players who are technical and also can spring a bit of a surprise and be unpredictable in a good way is really valuable. And when a team like Celta Vigo comes forward, and Celta Vigo are on a good run, remember, they'd gotten a win at Espanyol and beaten Barcelona, so they're going to be full of confidence. And then to catch them out is a really important way of going about that game.
They had been poor to start the season, though. Celta Vigo still just seem to be that really indifferent Jekyll and Hyde side at the moment in the La Liga campaign. Just can't quite get it right at times. And when it doesn't go right, it's disastrous completely. But you mentioned there Trigueros and Bruno Soriano in the heart of the pitch. And they were so good against Real Madrid, if you recall, back in September, and just anchoring that midfield when they played that 4-2-3-1 formation as well. It's just talking about that adaptability for different clubs. And as you say, Mark, it's very useful when you've got players that can shift around the pitch and perhaps sit inside, sit a little deeper, then move outside, be a bit more attacking and aggressive on the flanks. It's certainly useful for managers like Fran Escribu, who've got plenty then to work with. And if he can just carry on this momentum, Villarreal surely are going to be up and around the Europa League spots come the end of the season. We're going to take a very quick break here on the show. When we return, we're going to talk about Los Blancos, and Matt Lawrence will be joining us to take us through his thoughts on the game just in a moment when we come back here on Iron Elite. Welcome back to the show here on Eye on La Liga. We're going to kick things off taking a look back at an incredible Saturday of goals from the top three in Spain's top flight, although not quite the top three at the moment, with Barca sat down in fourth right now. We'll come to that later on, because we're going to start with Los Blancos and Real Madrid and their trip to Real Betis. And we've got an expert in the house today to join us to break down that game. He was watching all 90 minutes of it. He's an ex-professional footballer, former Fulham and Crystal Palace legend, Matthew Lawrence, joining me on the show today. Matt, pleasure to have a chat with you, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing really well, Ollie. How are you?
I'm very well. Very well indeed. Gutted that I haven't worked alongside you yet this season, covering a bit of the La Liga football. I've missed your voice, but missed your face as well, more importantly, Matt. It's always good to be sat in the chairs next to you.
Of course. It's been the B team all the way, I'm afraid, this season. Saving the A team, obviously, for later on in the season.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But you were watching Real Betis against Real Madrid this weekend, and Los Blancos cruising through this one. I mean, it looked like a pretty easy weekend for the big three in Spain in general, but this looked extortionately comfortable with a one goal lead after 4 minutes from Varane and very little fight back from Betis.
Yeah, it was far simpler than I think anybody thought. Real Betis at the Benito Villamarín Stadium, obviously. It's normally a difficult place to go. And with Real Madrid having suffered in the last few games, obviously, they've drawn their last four in all competitions. They've drawn their last three in La Liga. I think it was a real chance for Real Betis, you know, under the stewardship of Gus Poyet, to have a real go at a Real Madrid side, not firing blanks, but maybe misfiring slightly. And I was really looking forward to it. I thought the first 20 minutes to half an hour would be a proper blood and thunder, not quite a cup tie, but have a real local derby feel to it. It's normally quite a vociferous atmosphere at the stadium. But as you say, Varane scored after 4 minutes. It's a glorious little glanced header from a very good ball in from Toni Kroos. But after that, it was just complete and utter capitulation from Real Betis, and it wasn't almost a game of football. It was totally one-sided. It was attack v defence, and it was attack being Real Madrid against not even much of a defence in Real Betis. They were cut open all over the place, down the flanks specifically. In the first half, Marcelo down the left-hand side had the freedom of the city. He really did. He was up and down that touchline from the word go for all 45 minutes that first half. And it wasn't until half-time when Gus Poyet started changing things around that he was shackled a little bit more. But it was just so easy, so open. And the Real Madrid players, honestly, they came off at half-time and there was not a bead of sweat on a player. Normally players come off at half-time, hair all over the place, dirty knees maybe, sweaty shirts, they're having to change their shirts at half-time. There was no work. The kit man was not employed for Real Madrid at half-time. He wasn't needed. No new shorts, no new shirts. It was just that easy. It was phenomenal. As I say, this is a Real Madrid side who are under pressure. Look, they haven't lost a game in La Liga all season, or they hadn't going into this game. But there was little rumblings. Zidane was having to come out in his press conference before the game. He said, I know where I am, and if you draw three league games, you have to change something. And he was forced into certain changes, but he knew he was under pressure. Look, he's not a man, I don't think, who feels the pressure. He knows how to deal with being at a big club. He knows how to deal with it, certainly as a player, and he's taken that into his, you know, into his management style as well. He wasn't affected by it, and his players certainly didn't seem it. It's just, I was really disappointed in Betis. I thought they'd have a go at Real Madrid and really try and ruffle some feathers. But honestly, they did not lay a glove on them until goodness knows, I don't know, after about the 65th minute when they did manage to score a goal. I think it's the 55th minute and Seudo did pull one back. But even then, that was only because Real Madrid had taken their foot off the gas so much. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but yeah, they did sit back. But even then, after Betis had scored, Real Madrid then opened up again. But it just wasn't a game of football. It really wasn't. As I say, I use the phrase capitulation or the word capitulation, and it really was that. It's quite extraordinary. It was a totally easy game for Real Madrid. Players could be rested, and you know, obviously with the European competition coming up in midweek as well, it's a simple game for them.
I mean, you mentioned about the problems that Madrid have had. It would have been almost a month since their last victory with the four straight draws and the draws in the Champions League as well. And I think a lot of people thought with Sergio Ramos out, and Varane is a player who's been in and out of the side but hasn't quite created that partnership with Pepe yet. There's not that same chemistry as Pepe and Ramos have, of course, that this was a Madrid team that could have been taken. You almost saw that with the Betis goal, that the centre-backs just didn't seem in the right place with each other. Joaquim able to play a lovely little ball through the heart of the defence, and Sejuedo able to tuck it away, and a consolation but nothing else. But were you surprised at how well Madrid were able to defend with that change at centre-back forced by the Ramos injury over the international break?
It was, honestly, Ollie, it's just really hard to tell because Betis offered nothing. And by that, I'm not being flippant. They offered absolutely zero in the first half. So Varane and Pepe had the chance to play themselves into the game. It was 4-0 at half-time. I agree. The goal, they were cut open far too easily for the goal, but they'd got so gung-ho by that stage, they'd almost breathed a sigh of relief. The game was dead and buried. So I wouldn't judge the partnership on that goal they conceded. And I really wouldn't judge the partnership on this game as a whole. They both looked very comfortable for the majority of the game, but more so in going forward because they weren't put under any pressure. I don't know how they coped with each other defensively and how their communication was with each other. And I thoroughly agree. It takes a while. You know, I was a centre-half. And it does. It always takes you a good 10, 20 games to build up any kind of rapport, any kind of relationship, not only with your right centre-half being Varane playing at left centre-back, so to Pepe playing right centre-half, but then to Marcelo playing left-back as well, and then also to Navas, the goalkeeper behind you. That takes time. This game didn't highlight any of that because Betis was so bad. I was very impressed with Varane. Obviously, his aerial ability, scored the goal after the fourth minute, but it was more his aerial ability in the opposition's box, so attacking. But he did look was very, very comfortable on the ball. He was yes, the game was easy, but he was very fluid. Carrying the ball out of the back, you know, I will go back to someone of my era when I was growing up. He looked like Alan Hansen, so majestic, gliding out of defence with the ball at his feet. He's got similar sort of framework as Alan Hansen did back, you know, in the 80s when he was at the height of his abilities, playing those Liverpool sides that won league titles, that won European Cups. So he did. He was effortless. He was graceful on the ball and carrying it out of the back. Defensively, honestly, I just can't comment because they weren't troubled at all. It was too easy an afternoon. Marcelo and Carvajal, the two fullbacks, didn't defend at all. They were in the opposition half most of the game. So it is hard to tell. I'd reserve judgment on that partnership until I've seen another game or two when they've actually come under pressure. They really didn't come under any pressure whatsoever from Betis, barring a 5-minute spell in the second half, maybe between sort of 55th and 60th minute. But that was it. Yes, Madrid conceded the goal, but the game was dead and buried by then. So she
foot off the gas time, right, isn't it?
Yeah, you almost have a right to switch off a bit when you're 4-0 up. So, yeah, hard to judge. It really is.
You mentioned it takes sometimes 10 to 20 games to get that relationship pairing between two centre-backs. What's more important as a centre-back, to be paired and have that chemistry with the guy next to you, alongside you as your fellow centre-half, or with the fullback on the outside? Or is that very dependent on which side you're playing?
It depends who you're playing against, what formation they're playing against you. I think it can be an equally important, your fullback next to you as well as your centre-half partner. But I think ultimately you're playing up against one centre-forward nowadays, aren't you? Most teams just play with one main striker. So I feel it is really with the centre-half. You know full well, if one player, so Pepe's going to challenge the centre forward, then you, being Varane, would want to cover around behind him. So predominantly it is that centre-half partnership. And when I say 10, 20 games, that is to build up a really good rapport. And you literally then know every move that your fellow centre-half is making. I'm sure they've played together an awful lot before in training and things like that. But it is, when you come under the intense pressure and the intense scrutiny of, you know, a worldwide audience, and you know if you're playing the Champions League or Real Madrid are playing Barcelona, then there's a lot more pressure. It's not quite training. So it then becomes almost second nature. So you do want to have played a large number of games. Yes, they will miss Ramos. I'm not sure how much they'll miss Ramos in terms of his actual playing ability. I think Varane's equally as good as him, if not better. But I think it's the rapport that Ramos has grown, you know, grown into with Pepe, and also it's his leadership abilities that I think they will miss. If it was purely in terms of playing ability, then they're very much, much of a muchness. But it's everything else apart from that that Sergio Ramos obviously brings to the side. And that, of course, will be a miss. More often than not, that means in the dressing room before the game, in the dressing room at half-time, you know, he'll be somebody who's a second mouthpiece, or certainly a mouthpiece for the manager or the head coach on the field. So yes, it is a bit of a miss. But I was, as I say, I was impressed with Varane as much as I can be without really seeing him up with his back against the wall, so to speak, because Betis just didn't force that on Madrid in any way, shape or form.
We all know what Varane can do, and of course he has been paired with Pepe at previous occasions, and he's been in and out of the side for the last few years, and this is perhaps his opportunity. But is this perhaps the worst sort of game for Zinedine Zidane to have after the international break, after the scrutiny, because he got good performances out of players like Toni Kroos and Isco as well, but as you say, Matt, there was no fight back from Real Betis, and that then going into a Champions League game on Tuesday against Legia Warsaw, at least Madrid are at home in that. But Warsaw, you will expect, will put up more of a fight than perhaps Betis did, because they know if they've got any chance of staying above Sporting Lisbon, or getting above Sporting Lisbon in that Champions League group and getting into the Europa League, because really I think that might be their aim in this group, they need to try and get points, at least hold on and get a point away from home against the likes of Dortmund and Real Madrid. Perhaps not go for the jugular and for the victory, but this will be far more of a test. Having such an easy ride then, as I say, on the Saturday, does that make it more difficult for Zidane going into the midweek game?
I'm not sure. It could work either way, but I actually think it will benefit them. Players, as you mentioned, Isco and Toni Kroos, they look magnificent. Yes, they weren't up against a great opposition, but that's not their fault. As the cliche goes, you can only play what's put in front of you. what will have helped Zidane is he'll have seen players performing very, very well, or it looked as though they were performing well. He will have had an easy ride in terms of the players didn't break sweat, and I mean that sincerely. They hardly broke sweat, so it was very easy for them. So they're fully rested. I didn't see any injuries. I haven't read all the local Madrid papers as of the last few days to find out if that is the case, but they all looked fine. They all looked fighting fit. He could give a few minutes to Morata, gave some minutes to Asensio. You know, other players came on the pitch. Vasquez came on the pitch as well. So, I think that will be a positive. I really do. Look, you've just won 6-1 away from home, so it can't be deemed as anything more than a positive. There's nothing negative to take out of that game, as long as they didn't suffer injuries, and I don't think they did. Yes, there'll be more up against it, against Legia Warsaw, but as you said, they're at the Bernabeu. That's where they want to play. They want to be playing in front of 82,000, however many, 90,000 home fans, basically. So, I honestly don't think it can be deemed as any more than a positive. And let's be honest, your players are all on a high. They've just banged in 6 goals away from home. Mm. Yes, they didn't keep a clean sheet, but that'll be the least of their worries. They'll be firing on all cylinders, fit and raring to go for, yes, a harder Champions League game, but it's certainly not as hard as it can be. I think it's fitted or fallen really nicely after the international break, going into a simple tie against Betis, which maybe shouldn't have been so simple, and then going into almost as easy a tie as you can have in the Champions League against Legia Warsaw.
No disrespect to Legia Warsaw, but yeah, you'd rather have them than Borussia Dortmund or somebody
exactly.
like that, that's for sure. Matt, appreciate you coming on and breaking down the game for us as Zidane keeps his rotation going along. The Spanish papers asking for patience with BBC at the moment, but all things looking very pretty indeed for Los Blancos with that 6-1 victory before they head into the Champions League, Matt. And hopefully we can have another chat about all things Spanish football later on in the campaign, mate.
Yes, I hope so too, Ollie. Thanks so much for having me on, and I'll speak to you later.
Cheers, Matty. Take care, mate. Matt Lawrence there joining us here on the Marca podcast, who was on TalkSport 2 in the UK this week watching and commentating on that Real Betis against Real Madrid game. And as Matt said, there wasn't really much that Real Madrid had to do in that one to get past a Betis side that pretty much rolled over. But Mark and Ewan, I want to talk to you about your thoughts on what Matt was saying there about defensive partnerships. It is tough when you lose one of two key centre-backs who have great chemistry, like Ramos is out at the moment. Pepe's still in the heart of that defensive line, though, for Real Madrid. Are he and Varane going to have any sort of chemistry? Varane, as I say, has been around a lot. I just don't think the loss of Ramos is that important, even perhaps as a motivational figure, because there are plenty of players in that side who've been in and around the team a long time. And I mean, we saw Cristiano Ronaldo, for instance, as a motivational figure on the sideline of the European Championships final in the summer. If you need a motivational figure, you can go to him and he can play that role if you need. He just perhaps doesn't need to as much when he's got the key Spanish contingent at Real Madrid doing that.
Yeah, I think there's almost an argument to be made that Real Madrid look a little bit more solid, a little bit less of a bomb scare at the back without Sergio Ramos in the team. With Varane and Pepe, you don't expect a penalty kick to be given up, but with Ramos, you never know when there's going to be a penalty kick given away, a red card coming his way. I'm not saying Sergio Ramos is a worse player than Varane, but in terms of being consistent and just, you know, keeping things simple, not trying to do too much, Varane and Pepe, if they get a few more games together, which they will over the next month, they might be able to form a more, I don't know what the word would be, probably stable partnership than you could have with Ramos in the mix, because you just never know what he's going to pull off next. It could be a goal, or it could be, you know, something that loses you the match.
It hasn't got that walking yellow card feel to it, a Real Madrid back four without Sergio Ramos in it. That's for sure. What about, Matt was also touched on the Mark, the kind of chemistry that it's important to have between your fellow centre-backs, but actually getting caught with a lack of chemistry between the fullbacks as well, I thought was a very interesting point, because that's often overlooked as well. If you're a new centre-back going in, you've got to be able to work alongside your partner in the heart of the pitch, but you've got to make sure you're on the same wavelength as the fullback. Know when he's going to push up and get forward. And in a side like Real Madrid's that have two very aggressive fullbacks, whoever's out on the pitch, it's important for Varane to just click in nicely. But a real opportunity, as we've said before, for him to make his mark.
You're absolutely right about the fullbacks getting forward, because Marcelo effectively is, like against Betis, he was a left winger, he wasn't a left back. And bigger teams have often caught that out in Real Madrid, and that's often come a cropper for them. So in terms of where Varane plays in that sort of system, it almost becomes a three at the back when you have the ball. And even at Betis on the weekend, we saw Pepe burst forward on a counter-attack. And if he would have got caught out then God knows what could have happened. But that's the type of thing that better teams are going to do. And as Athletic Bilbao come to face Real, we'll see that manifest itself a bit more. But the chemistry between them, you know, I think when you're at the world-class elite level of sport, the players' ability to remember instruction and their ability to carry out the basics is so much higher than you might see down the league and down the teams in the lower leagues, etc. That is so important in making that chemistry work, because the confidence in your partner and the ability for you to carry out the basic instructions is just going to put you on that level above whatever team you're facing almost.
And it was the bare minimum that was needed, really, against Gaspoit's Real Betis side that struggled at the start of the campaign, seemed to move themselves out of the relegation battle and are now creeping right back down into it again. And they looked awful, absolutely awful, against Los Blancos. When we come back on the show, we're going to have a look ahead to the Champions League games, have a quick look back at Barcelona and Atletico Madrid's games as well from the weekend. All that and more coming your way when we return here on Eye on La Liga.
Can't be sleeping, keep on waking without the woman next to me. Guilt is burning, inside I'm hurting. This ain't a feeling I can keep, so blame it on the night.
Welcome back to the show then. Just two more of the big three to take a look at back from the weekend. Plenty of goals once again. I've actually had an email from Jason of something he'd like to discuss with Barcelona. But let's talk about Atletico Madrid. They've been the side that have been renowned so far this season for keeping teams out, keeping clean sheets. They've only conceded three goals, even with Granada putting one past them this weekend. But for them to put seven past them, we expect it from Real Madrid. We expect it from Barcelona. But Atletico Madrid getting in the goal-scoring form as well this campaign. Huge marker for me laid down for them to put seven past a lowly Granada side that have been, again, torrid so far at the back this season, now conceded 23 goals in their first eight games of the league. But this is what the other two always generally do when they're surging towards a title run. They start whooping these teams 6-7-0 at the bottom at the foot of the La Liga table. And Atletico now getting in on the act as well. Simeone happy to put the foot down and really put a team to the sword, Ewan.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that on the way to a title win is when these teams are scoring 6-7, because the only other time they've scored 7 under Simeone was the year they won the league. They beat Getafe, it might have been 7-1, but I think it was 7-0, and they went on to win the league. That was one of the kind of defining games in the springtime of that season, where people started thinking, okay, this is, you know, not just scraping a win against Getafe, this is a team that means business. And it's got a similar feel to it. You know, Barcelona won early on Saturday 4-0, and who'd have thought that Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid would go on to win by bigger margins than that? I know it was Granada, and you know, they almost made Paco Gemes look like a defensive mastermind by conceding 7 in the now that he's gone. But you know, there's the defensive characteristics of that are still lingering. They looked a shambles at the back, especially after they lost their lead, but it showed a lot of you know, positives from Atletico, and it was especially encouraging, I think, that it wasn't Griezmann or Gamero getting on the score sheet. All the goals came from other players, so it's not just relying on Griezmann, as they were guilty of last season at times. The goals were coming from everywhere, from the bench and from the midfielders.
Well, you look at this Atletico side at the moment, I mean, Gaitán's got two this season, Coque's got one, Carrasco with the three, of course, on the weekend, Thiago's got one, Gamiero's got three, Griezmann's got six, Torres has picked up two, Angel Correa's picked up three. There's a real sharing the load, if you will. Is that important for a side like Simeone's? Because yes, they've got that key man in Griezmann, but overworking him is something that we've seen be problematic for the other two big sides on their title run-ins at times, when they're overworking the likes of Ronaldo or Messi, tired legs kick in as well. This will just help keep everybody fresh for a long run-in and be able to work on the Copa del Rey and on the Champions League too, and just have everybody upbeat and thinking like they're all inputting, and it will just keep a great momentum going if Simeone's side maintain this at the moment.
It's all very relevant to going back to the time they won the title, as you just alluded to there, Ewan, because the only other time that they've scored 21 goals after eight games this side of the 1950s was when they won the league in 2013-14, and that year Diego Costa had 10 goals at this point, and it was less shared around. And what we had at the end of the season, of course, was Diego Costa's injury problems cost them the Champions League, possibly. Mm. So that it kind of runs quite nicely in a parallel sense that we've now got Gamero, Torres and Correa are doing a good supporting role of the attackers. Carrasco's got a hat-trick. We've got Thiago on the score sheet even. The spread of this squad is so much nicer, and that's even comparing it to the La Liga title winning season.
And they've got a really nice Champions League game coming up as well against FC Rostov, the bottom side in Group D in the Champions League, and arguably the weakest of all four in that group, along with Bayern Munich and PSV Eindhoven. And even PSV haven't looked like the PSV that really troubled Atletico last season. Will there be any sort of foot on the off the gas going into the midweek games for Atletico? Will there be, Simeone surely won't let them kind of sit back and relax against a Rostov side. Will he just want to carry this momentum on and go for the jugular?
Well, they want to, but whether they do or not, it's a different matter. It's a 5.5-hour flight out to Russia, and they had a similarly long trip last season when they went to Astana, and everyone expected they would, you know, walk past them easily. But they drew 0-0 in that away game. I think just, you know, the travel, you know, did have an impact in that game. It could be something similar against Rostov in Russia. Back at home at the Cauldron, you'd expect them to beat Rostov comfortably, but you never know with these trips out to the far eastern side of Europe.
More worrying perhaps is that they have to then go away to Sevilla next weekend after the long trip. Teams don't like that Thursday-Sunday game. I mean, it's an early kickoff, or earlier kickoff, 3 o'clock on the Sunday against Sevilla after the long trip on the Wednesday out to Rostov. So will Simeone perhaps even rest players in midweek in preparation for Sevilla?
Well, it looks like he's considering resting Gamero. Torres was the one in training today that was starting up front alongside Griezmann. So yeah, he could be putting Torres out, give him a run out and keep Gamero fresh. And you never know, if they are winning by 2 or 3, then you could start to take players off in the second half.
It'll be interesting to see how Atletico approach the midweek Champions League games. There is one more massive Champions League game that we do really need to discuss. Of course, Sevilla in action as well. But again, it's not the most enthralling encounter when you think of Sevilla having to go away against Dinamo Zagreb. But I suppose every single Champions League encounter is interesting for them in their first season in the competition. But Barcelona taking on Manchester City, and a big win against the 10-man Deportivo side on the weekend, Mark. I mean, Neymar, Suarez, phenomenal performances again, but it's almost really what we expect from Barcelona going into a Champions League week, to be quite aggressive and looking quite good, playing that three at the back again as well.
Yeah, the three at the back, I don't know if they're just kind of teasing Guardiola, because there's that uncertainty as to whether they're going to play it in midweek. I think we all imagine that they're going to go back to 4-3-3 with Iniesta starting. But how do you fit Rafinha in there when he's got a brace on the weekend? So it is kind of teasing Guardiola. It makes him think as to how he's going to set up his Man City team as a kind of second-guess double bluff scenario. So it's all nice and interesting there. But in terms of this 4-0 win, it is exactly as we expect Barcelona to play. They have the players who have been a little bit injured and on internationals. They bring them all back in and they finish the game on a high as a result of that. So it is sort of business as usual for Barcelona, and they'll know that they're fourth in the table, but I don't think they'll be too worried about it at this point in time.
Vidal being left out is something Jason said he wanted to have you guys touch on. Vidal being left out of this Barcelona side once again, seventh game in a row he's been left out by Luis Enrique. Is it curtains for him in terms of his time at the Nou Camp?
Yeah, it could well be. I mean, the fact they played the 3-4-3, you know, that was obviously in response to not wanting to play Vidal as a normal right back, but it was even looking like they were going to play the youth team, Nili Perdomo. I think he picked up an injury late in the week, but there was all the signs were pointing to that if they did play four at the back, it wasn't even going to be Vidal that would play in that situation. It was going to be the youth teamer. So yeah, it doesn't look good for him. It looks like they're already scouting other right backs, and you know, they tried, hasn't really worked out, and it's a shame for him more than anything. You know, he's not had much time to prove himself.
Ewan just killing off his chances of getting back. Any more positivity from you, Mark, at all? Or is that him done and dusted? I mean, Ewan's written off it, seemingly, his footballing career, let alone his time at Barcelona with that damnation of it.
I can't honestly be that much more positive. So
If you compare
him to Arda Turan, which is the natural thing to do, you've got Turan had an absolutely awful season last year, had an awful summer, and then has kicked on and done okay this year, had a few chances, etc. Vidal, he hasn't had the chances in the team, but you can't imagine that he's been cast aside completely in training. You'd have thought that Luis Enrique would have had the same upturn in form in mind. It just hasn't materialised. I don't know. The problem is when you have these players at big clubs, is moving them on is quite difficult. So he might, his career will suffer if he just sits in reserves for another year and a half, however's left on his contract. So I can't see much short-term turnaround for him.
It's interesting that Luis Enrique would rather play that 3-4-3, which is relatively new in terms of what we know and love from Barcelona, rather than perhaps risk it with a four at the back and Vidal being involved in that. You mentioned it earlier, Mark. Do you think there will be a chance that Luis Enrique does play this 3-4-3 against Manchester City? And does Pep have enough knowledge anymore of this Barcelona side that it's really going to make an impact going into the big Champions League game? And it's the biggest game of the week by a long way, I'm sure. 90% of European football fans' eyes will be on Manchester City's trip to the Camp Nou in midweek. Does he have that much of an advantage anymore? He's had his time away with Bayern. I'm sure he's still very close to the club, but it's a different makeup still to this side. There are some familiar faces, but the processes have all just changed a little bit.
The problem is that those players that are still around are the ones that are the hardest to get a grip on. So Iniesta, Messi, Busquets, yeah, they're still around. But those are the players that were untouchable when Guardiola was manager, and they're pretty much untouchable in a large sense now. So I'm not sure that Guardiola is going to have a magic formula for dealing with Messi, because we'd have seen it before now. He took Bayern Munich to the Camp Nou a couple of years ago and got hammered. So there's a chance. There's always a chance that that will happen again. And Man City just aren't in great form at the moment. They're not clinical. Their defence is shaky. You could almost argue this is the worst time possible to go and play that game for Guardiola.
I was going to say they were clinical at the start of the season with 7-7, I think it was, to start the Premier League campaign for Manchester City. And people were calling Aguero once again the greatest striker in Europe, and up there with basically he and Suarez vying for that little kind of trade tag on the back of their shirt. Difficult for this Barcelona side, though, to completely shut down Manchester City. From what we've seen, Ewan, over this season so far, they're not going to be easy to get past City. And do you think they will be more difficult in Europe to get past with Guardiola's experience and the way he's changed this Manchester City side? Because a lot of people have commented on that Guardiola influence already being visible.
Yeah, I think his Champions League experience is going to be very useful, but also the experience of the players. I mean, last season they went to semi-final. They finally got over that Champions League hump. They kind of now know what it takes to get through a group, whereas for a long time, and they were put in some really tough groups, which is the same this year, but they now have that experience of getting over that, of getting through a few ties. You know, they even came close to knocking Real Madrid out in the semi-finals. And it's not like the players had no Champions League experience at the start of the sort of Manchester City Champions League era. They'd all played in the competition before. They just didn't seem to click as a unit, whereas last season they did. So I think last season's experience will probably prove just as useful as anything that Guardiola can teach them. Yeah, it remains to be seen what Guardiola's going to opt for tactically. You can't really predict what any of these lineups are going to be. The two coaches, they love a surprise, so yeah, they're probably going to end up surprising each other.
Messi back in the starting lineup for Barca for the Champions League? Does he make it back in at all?
You'd have to think so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he would that Luis Enrique would want to rest him, and after giving him a bit of time this weekend, you'd have thought Messi would be champing at the bit to be able to get back involved. And generally, if Lionel Messi wants to play, he ends up playing regardless of his fitness. So I have to say, a fair few of the journalists at Mark are predicting that it will be MSN back in full flow in the Champions League. It's going to be a massive night, of course, on Wednesday night as Guardiola goes back to the Camp Nou. I can't wait to sit down and watch all of that. Of course, Real Madrid, as we said, taking a Legia Warsaw, Sevilla have to go to Dinamo Zagreb, and Atletico Madrid away at Rostov. And then another week of La Liga action too. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure to chat with you both about the last weekend. We've had plenty of goals and plenty to discuss, and there'll be plenty more to come, I'm sure, after the midweek action. We'll be back in 7 days' time. But for now, it's a big thank you to you, mate. Appreciate the time, as always.
Thanks for having me on.
Also, of course, a big thanks to Mark as well, mate.
Damn, mate, sorry.
Enjoy the week. Enjoy all the football. Remember to get on Marker in English. That's Marker in English on Twitter. Get onto marker.com as well for all of the top quality news, views, debate, discussion from our fine writers there. And of course, you can catch the podcast on iTunes and on Audio Boom. And remember to subscribe on either site. Until 7 days' time, there's plenty of football to get watching. I'm going to be sat on the sofa for a very long time indeed. Have a good week.